You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Okay, welcome back to the channel, y'all. We got another great episode of Rants and Gems. I got a special guest coming on in a minute. We're talking tax cuts, SALT deductions, tariffs on steel and aluminum, and the real impact that's going to happen on the housing market, man. So if it's your first time here, welcome to the channel. Make sure you like, comment, share, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications. Every Tuesday, Thursday, we're coming to you guys live at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, if you're a real estate professional, type in chat where you're from, what market you serve in. But we're not going to waste no time because this is a very important episode for you guys to really tune into tonight. And we're going to give you a lot of information. So get your pens and pads ready. I don't know about y'all, but I got my pen and my pad right here because my special guest tonight, this man is incredible. Editor-in-chief of Investopedia. Make sure you guys go to investopedia.com today. Save it, bookmark it as one of your favorites. I got the world famous, my brother, Caleb Silver, in the building. What's going on, Caleb? How are you today?
So good to be here. Thanks for having me, Matt. It's an honor to be on this show. I've learned so much from you over the years, and this is a real treat for me. So thanks for having me. I'm excited to
likewise, brother. I'm looking forward to it, man. Thank you for coming on the show. I know you're a busy man, and I appreciate you spending time with my community tonight. But let's jump right into this, man. We're only, 3 weeks into this new presidency, and there's never a dull moment, right? First, let's talk about these tax cuts and how this impacts the housing market and future and current homeowners.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of proposed tax cuts that the president is trying to push through, but a lot of this really depends on the budget reconciliation, right? They got to raise the spending limit because we're overspent in this country again. But the key ones, especially the ones that affect the housing market, is increasing the SALT deduction. The SALT deduction, for folks that aren't used to it, the state and local tax deduction, it's a U.S. federal tax provision. It allows taxpayers to deduct certain state and local taxes from their federal taxable income. That limit right now is $10,000. And it doesn't get people up to the standard deduction, which we know is $32,000. So there's talk of doubling that. There's even talk of multiplying that by 10 to make it $100,000, which would be a huge tax benefit for homeowners, especially the ultra high net worth, but also homeowners that have big tax bills. Now, I don't think we'll see $100,000 on that, but wouldn't be surprised if we did see it double. So that's a big one that he's proposed. And obviously, he's proposed this before, certainly in his first term. He has a kind of the power of the pen, but getting tax cuts approved by Congress, even though Congress is Republican and he controls both houses, the Republicans control both houses. It's going to be tougher than you think, but this is one I actually think will go through.
Okay. So do you think raising a SALT deduction cap is a realistic political move for 2025? And what does this really mean for the taxpayers, right? So most people out here, as we know, property taxes have increased ever since, 2020 happened when home prices are rising. Property taxes are through the roof right now in many markets. So what does this really mean for those folks who might be struggling because the escrow payment keeps going up every year?
Yeah, well, it matters if you're going to itemize your deductions. And if your deductions on your taxes, that your property taxes, certain local taxes like registration fees, if those amount to more than the standard deduction, it's going to allow people to get a little bit more of a tax break. So it's either going to be more money back in their pocket or less money going out to the government, depending on how much your tax bill is. Ultimately, this really helps people that have higher value homes who pay high property taxes, people in states with high property taxes and counties with high property taxes as well. But even if you've made improvements to your home, if you've been in your home, you've made improvements over the last few years and the value of your home has gone up in terms of the assessment, your taxes have gone up as well. So this could benefit you too. So this could be a pretty big deal, especially for the higher income folks or the people that have properties worth a lot of money.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. So if the SALT deduction cap is set to expire this year in 2025, let's just say worst case scenario, Caleb, that they don't, this doesn't get approved and they don't extend it past this year. How can us homeowners prepare for a potential impact on their tax bills?
Well, we know property taxes keep going up every single year. A lot of those really are controlled by the county you live in or the city that you live in. They sometimes need to raise those to make up for their budget shortfall. So you can expect those to continue going up. It's hard to find a break around that. That's one of the burdens of being a homeowner and one of the things that you educate people so well on. It's not just your mortgage, right? It's not just your down payment. It's not just your maintenance. It's not just your weekend trips to the Home Depot. There is a lot that goes into affording a home. So it's more than the sticker price. So you can just expect that to happen and have to budget accordingly for that. And there may be some other tax cuts that do go through that could be beneficial for everybody. But a lot of these are really targeted towards higher income folks. Let me just give you a list of some of the things that the president's proposed. Extending the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from 2017. Those are the tax cuts he put in place back then. Those brought down the taxable income rate for almost every income level, but it benefits the people at the high end the most because they're the ones who are taxed the most. But everybody got a little bit of a tax break there. Lowering the corporate tax rate, 27% is where the Biden administration put it, putting it to 21%, even 15% for some companies. A lower tax rate for corporations is great for their bottom lines, which is good for investors investing in those stocks. That usually translates to higher profit margins. He's also talking about SALT relief. We mentioned that. That could be a doubling or it could be even more than a doubling. Cutting taxes on tips, cutting taxes on overtime pay, cutting taxes on Social Security. That's going to be very difficult. Cutting taxes on domestic production. This is the other side of the seesaw of the tariff war, right? We're going to put tariffs on all imports, but we're going to cut taxes if you make it in America. We'll get to that tariff discussion in a second. And then another big one doesn't affect the real estate market, but it's closing the carried interest loophole for private equity and for those NFL owners who own big stadiums. They've been getting away with murder on the tax front for years. He's talking about closing that, which is so interesting because these are some of the richest people in the country who are also backers of the president. So he's maybe giving them a little pain there so he can get these other ones potentially passed.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting too, because it's like these guys have poured hundreds of millions of dollars into Trump, and then now he's coming back and saying that he basically wants to tax them. Like, that's kind of, you know, when he said that, I said, how's he ever going to get away with this? But, you know, it's Trump. You know, he's kind of doing what he wants at this point.
I think he gives a little pain there for a lot of gain in other places. And he has definitely opened up the market for a lot of gain in other places. Don't forget, the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessner, comes from private equity, right? So they're also talking about creating a sovereign wealth fund from the government. These are these people are taking Wall Street to Washington in a very serious way. But that last one is very interesting. It is poking a finger in the eye of all that private equity money.
No, definitely. So you brought up the tariffs, right, on steel and aluminum. How does this affect the cost of new construction and overall housing market prices if this does come through?
Yeah, up and to the right, Matt. So 25% tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports. Guess what we import a lot of? Steel and aluminum, right?
Yep.
And other metals, but particularly steel and aluminum. And a lot of aluminum comes from China, right? We get a lot of... We get a lot of that also from Canada. So this is just going to raise the price of housing materials for new construction or for renovation, right? So all the housing starts that we've been hopeful for and all the momentum and all the predictions that the National Association of Realtors has made in terms of housing construction this year, because we do have a low supply, you could just assume that prices are going to go up, which are going to drive housing prices up. And you know this as well. Mortgage rates aren't coming down anytime soon. The NAR, National Association of Realtors, predicting 6% range for this year. That's higher than most people have in terms of the people that own their homes already in this country. And that's almost higher than the breaking point where people just aren't interested in trying to buy a home.
So we have, yeah, this is so crazy, right? Because they want to make things more affordable is what they're saying. But when you put in tariffs, a 25% tariff on steel and aluminum, which we need, which we import the most of for the housing market, like how in God's green earth do they think this is going to make housing more affordable? This is going to make everything more expensive. If it's expensive for the builder, it's going to be more expensive for the consumer because the builder is just going to pass the cost off.
Pass it on.
And vice versa. So do you think, is today's home buyer going to be priced out because of all these tariffs?
I think things are going to, well, sometimes the tariff is the stick and the bark is worse than the bite. And we've already seen that with Canada and Mexico, where he threw down 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico, our biggest trading partners, and then decided to delay those a month when they agreed to put more troops on the border to keep the fentanyl and illegal aliens from coming in the country. So that was more bark than bite, but still he could do it at any moment. We know this president is afraid to make quick decisions like that. So it depends on if they actually happen, when they start. Are they rolling tariffs? Is it all at once or is it sequential or is there a 3-month trial period? Right. So, but all of that, as you know, especially in the housing market and the building market, disrupts the supply chain. And we've seen what happens to a disrupted supply chain, certainly during the pandemic, but in a supply chain, in a right now kind of a just-in-time building environment too, right? Nobody's long ordering, you know, rolls of aluminum because they're afraid to have it. You know, to have it and not be able to use it. They don't want the unused inventory, but it does mess up the supply chain. So then things become more expensive. You got barges, you know, backed up, you know, and we can't get the materials we want, or builders don't want to hold the inventory because they're afraid that they're going to get stuck with those costs. All of that makes things more expensive too. Tariffs do a bunch of things. They're inflationary by definition, full stop, right? Prices go up. And those prices are passed to the consumer. They mess up the supply chain because no one knows what to order and when. They also slow growth because when those higher prices get passed to us, the consumer, what do? We slow down our spending. And when we slow down our spending, the economy stalls. 70% of GDP is consumer spending. And then the other thing that they do is they bring retaliatory tariffs. And we've already seen that from China. So all of that is like perfect storm for higher costs, full stop.
Higher costs, higher home values. Great for homeowners, right? People who are owning homes, this could be great news for us because, look, homes have appreciated year over year over year for the past several years, right? And although appreciation is back to some sort of normalcy, I don't think we're ever going to see 20%, 30% like we did during the pandemic years. But I think last year, homes appreciated on average nationwide around 5-6%, somewhere around there. Do you see home prices in 2025 going higher than that appreciation number from 2024 with these tariffs? Do you think we can see a national average around 10% by the end of the year with these tariffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be on the high side just because there's just not a ton of activity in the buying market right now, right? You know, first-time homebuyers feel priced out. They're waiting for the fat pitch. That fat pitch may not be coming for a while. Sellers are reluctant to sell because they don't want to jump out of a, you know, what 50% of mortgage owners have a mortgage under 5%, I think, mm-hmm. or even more. So they don't want to jump into a higher mortgage. So they got to be, you know, thinking, you know, that's not a good trade-off for them. And so you just don't have a lot of activity. So that will kind of keep prices a little bit at bay. But when you're talking about new construction, right, you're talking about new condos being built or whatever, all of those prices are going to go up. And if there's demand for that because it's new and it might be more affordable in some cities that are trying to do this, those prices are just going to keep going up. The thing that might change and might be beneficial is, you know, this is an anti-regulatory administration. They are trying to remove guardrails and obstacles for getting deals done, for mergers and acquisitions, for securitizing every part of this America First agenda. And I think that could mean loosening the rules on mortgage lending. If you see what just happened with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which mm-hmm. was established after the Great Financial Crisis because banks did irresponsible lending to people that couldn't handle the loans and it crashed the economy and almost broke the global economy in half. Well, they created a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to make sure that, you know, didn't happen. Well, that's just been that's been completely defunct by this government. If you go to the cfpb.gov website right now, you will get a 404. That page does not exist. So you could get a loosening in mortgage lending rules. What could go wrong, Matt? But that could also make it a little bit easier for people to try to get into that first home or buy that next home.
Yeah, I'm from them defunding the CFPB. I mean, I don't know if I like that move. You know, I've been in this business for 21 years. So I came into business during the wild cowboy days, right? The subprime crisis. I mean, it was the wild, wild west. If you had a pulse, you can get a loan. Yeah. There was absolutely no type of regulation. And me personally, I feel as if the industry, the mortgage industry specifically, has been better because of the regulation, right? You can't go out here and just overcharge people no more, right? There's checks and balances in place. And I think that makes it better for the consumer. Now, with getting rid of or defunding the CFPB, like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I like this move by this administration from doing so.
Yeah, well, they're getting rid of all the watchdogs. And it's going to get, I think it could get pretty scary out there. And the good thing about the CFPB and a lot of the tighter regulations around lending is we've had a lot less defaults, right? People are not going under like they used to. Now, there was a lot of other things that contributed to the great financial crisis, but that was one, over leverage. And over leverage comes when you don't have guardrails to keep the industry in order and make it fair for both consumers and for banks. And, you know, we had a pretty good housing industry after that was created. It didn't destroy the housing market at all. It took us a while to come out of the ashes of the great financial crisis, but we did, right? And homeowners benefited from that. So the lack of guardrails, the lack of regulation and enforcement in this sector, that scares me a little bit because I was there through the great financial crisis and it was not good.
No, it wasn't good at all. And that's why for me, it's like, why would you want it to go back to that? Right. I can understand you want less regulation. You want banks to loosen up, so to speak, and lend more to get things moving. OK, I get that. But just to get rid of the watchdog that protected the consumer, to me, I just think this is a bad signal. And if they kind of put in place where there's no checks and balances for the banks, I mean, we might see a repeat of the programs. I'm not going to say we're going to see a repeat of the Great Recession, but we probably see a lot of these programs, these high-risk mortgages and all these sophisticated products come back out to the market now because there is no regulation. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, just assume that the mortgage industry knows no bounds when it comes to creativity and when
that's a fact.
In terms of creating creative lending products, right, that entice people to take out loans that they might not be able to afford and pay for over time. And we're not even talking about the fact that insurance rates have gone up. It's even harder to get insurance and almost impossible in some states to cover the things that you actually need covered. So that I'm very interested to see what happens with insurance regulation right now, especially in light of the fires in California and all the natural disasters this year. It's becoming an almost an equation that doesn't work anymore. You need home insurance to get the 30-year mortgage. But insurance companies don't want to insure you for the things that actually protect your house. So how are you going to get the mortgage without the insurance in a state where you kind of have to have it? You're going to have to buy more expensive insurance and then hope your insurance company doesn't go under. So we're heading for a perfect storm of a lot of very challenging obstacles facing the housing market. I think the overall economy, and so much of the economy, is tied to our homes, what we spend on our homes, building. And I think this is precarious.
Yeah, definitely. Let's stay on insurance since we were just talking about that. What are some of the factors that are driving the recent spike in homeowners insurance? Because in some of these, like Texas, Florida, I mean, some of these policies is just absolutely ridiculous. It's unaffordable. What are some of these factors that's just driving these prices up from these insurance companies?
More claims, I mean, to begin with. So more claims because we're having more natural disasters, more climate disasters, more floods and wildfires, insurers pulling out of states. So, you know, in cases like California, where they had to establish a state-run insurance program that's underfunded and can't even pay for what just happened because that was billions of dollars worth of damage. So you have more claims, more disasters, higher rebuilding costs because materials are more expensive due to inflation, right? And they're only going to get more expensive due to tariffs, and less coverage on the reinsurance side. So for every insurer, every big insurer, call it an Allstate, a State Farm, anybody that's insuring your home, there's a reinsurance company behind it with, you know, tens of billions of dollars that reinsure the insurance companies in case of losses. And there have just been more losses over time. Insurance has become a very difficult business because there's just more risk and the payouts are bigger and more lawsuits too. More litigation means more time in court for these insurance companies. They got to spend time there. They're going to raise prices.
So how can homeowners protect themselves from these rising insurance costs? Is it worth switching providers once your year premium is up? Because, you know, for me, Caleb, that's one of the things that I do. I'm always looking at my insurance on all my properties. And then I'm saying, okay, where can I go and probably get same coverage or more, but for a lesser price?
Yeah,
because I'm not married to my insurance company. So is that something that we should all be looking into as homeowners?
Yeah. But the first thing you need to do is say, am I paying more than I need to pay? Or am I paying a lot and not getting the coverage that I want, right? So you have to establish that. Or you feel like your insurance is not covering you for the things you need and that you could get a better deal. So the first thing you can do is negotiate, right? You call your insurance agent and be like, hey, this has gone up X amount over the past 3 or 4 years. Nothing's really changed. And if they're like, sorry, that's just the way it is, you can break up with them if you have a place to go. You got to shop around and make sure that you can get a better deal. And in some states, it's getting harder and harder to do that. But bundling your insurance is not the worst thing in the world either. You could get a better deal sometimes through some insurers if you do the homeowners, the car, and maybe another aspect of your insurance together. They might give you a break because you've bundled it all together and brought the business to them. They love that. They'll send you a coffee mug and, you know, a t-shirt if you're lucky. So you can bundle. And then, you can, again, shop online too. There are some insurers that may not necessarily be domiciled in the state. You just want to make sure they're covering you for the things that you need covered, because ultimately, you know, I think there are so many homeowners right now who have watched their homes destroyed saying, why was I paying those monthly payments? And what was the purpose of that premium if they're not going to cover me? We know that in California alone, I think State Farm said it's facing billions of dollars in claims already in suits and frankly doesn't have the money to pay them out.
Yeah, man, this is between insurance, between property taxes, it's just becoming real unaffordable for a lot of people, man. And I hope there can be some sort of solution because, you know, I'm looking at people's profiles every day, Caleb, and I'm just like, damn, how the hell is their insurance $5,000 a year? Like, it's just getting ridiculous now, man. Yeah. And I don't see it coming to no end in sight, because like you said, as more natural disasters continue happening, as, you know, more claims happen, these insurance companies, I just feel like they're just going to keep raising the price over and over every year. Like, it's pretty sad, man.
Yeah. So I don't want to be all doom and gloom. You can get creative about how to find workarounds. I know you're really good at that and you understand the system better than others and are great at educating people about it. But, you know, you've seen people, you know, maybe take on assumable mortgages, or you've seen people pull together to buy a property together and try to bring those costs down into some sort of a compound or family living situation. There are ways to get creative about getting that home and being able to afford the insurance, even the rising premiums, but it's not like they're going to go back down anytime soon. That's just not the way this system works, right? They may increase at a slower rate over time, but don't expect your insurance premiums and your monthly payments to just come down 25%. They're not going back to where they were. Why? There's price elasticity because it is an absolute necessity for us to have. And they know we're going to pay what we need to pay to cover our homes, even if they're not going to pay out when we actually need them to.
Yeah, and I say the same thing for home prices too, Caleb, right? Like, I know a lot of people are on the sidelines, and I definitely agree with you. That's why I preach about house hacking and doing things like that to make it as affordable as you can. But there's a lot of people that's on the sidelines waiting for, you know, this ultimate reset in home prices. You know, they're waiting for a crash. And I don't foresee no sort of real estate crash happening no time soon. So what is your 2025 forecast for home prices and mortgage rates?
Right. So to just add on to your point there, if we see a crash in home prices, it's because something is very wrong in the financial system, because so many people's wealth is tied up into their homes, right? U.S. household net worth, Matt, is at an all-time high. Why is it at an all-time high? Because of the rise of asset prices. Home values, right? 40-odd percent plus percent, close to 50% of households own the home, and the stock market over the past few years. That's why we have that. And that's the top 10% in this country. And you know this well, that own that wealth. So that's where their wealth is, and they're going to keep it there or pass it down to their generations. My forecast for this year is tied to two things. Obviously, the 30-year fixed is the big bogey, because anytime it's over 6.5%, it just deep freezes the housing market. Nobody's out looking. Nobody's out buying and transacting except cash buyers or the big financial institutions, the Goldmans of the world, you know, the BlackRocks of the world that have the money to accumulate like entire zip codes, right? They're buyers, and they own a lot of real estate, and they're going to keep buying more as long as they can. So, but anyway, if we have mortgage rates above 6.5%, and I don't think we will, I think they'll come down a little bit. The Fed will eventually maybe lower rates a half a point. 30 years sensitive to that, but even more sensitive to the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury, the most widely held, most traded, most trusted asset on the planet, right? But the yield on that has been very high. It's above 4.5%. Anytime it pops above 4.5%, stocks sell off, right? It is the ultimate risk barometer. Now, why is that? Why is the yield on that keep rising? The yield on that keeps rising because there is more and more risk to the U.S. economy right now, and it keeps growing by the day with the announcement of new tariffs, right? With the announcement of deepening the conflicts we have with countries right now that are adversarial to the United States, with layoffs we know that are coming in the government sector. All these things point to an economy that is going to slow. And if that economy slows, the yield on our bonds goes up. They become more risky, right? And when that yield goes up, it really keeps the 30-year fixed high. So that's a long way of saying I see 30-year staying pretty high, and I don't see housing prices coming down that much this year, if at all. I see them going up a little bit, probably 5%, maybe. I'm just going off the NAR, their forecast, and I don't know better than they do. So you're going to have that dynamic in place. There are cities and counties where there are some affordability and the housing market's hot and there's still opportunity. But, you know, people want to live where they want to live and where they have to live with their families and go to work. So it's not like, hey, why don't you just go buy in Arkansas right now because it's super affordable if you live in, you know, Long Island.
That's going to be a hard one to pull off. Moving from the island to Arkansas, but I definitely get your point. Look, you got to do what you got to do. Real estate is still one of the great investments that's out there. And what I always encourage my audience is, look, first of all, educate yourself as much as possible, especially with the CFPB being defunded. Right now, guys, more than ever, and I need everybody to really pay attention to me who's watching this live and going to watch this on the replay or listen on Rants and Gems on audio. If you guys are not educating yourself at the highest levels right now, if you're not tapping into me, if you're not going to investopedia.com every single day and learning, right? The more you learn, the more you earn. There's no protection for you guys no more. They just defund it. Go to the website. The protection is gone now. So you have to learn the real estate game before you go out here and put a red cent into buying any type of property, because you have to save yourself right now. There's no protection for you at this moment. So if you don't put enough hours into your education, you could be setting yourself up for a complete failure. So please don't repeat history of what happened. When I first came in this business, people were just so happy to buy a house. They didn't care what type of loan they got. They didn't know the terms, the conditions. They didn't even know what adjustable rate meant. They didn't know anything, right? They depended on the professionals to tell them stuff, but the professionals didn't know nothing either, just to be honest with you. So you guys, with the information and technology that we have available in 2025, you have to put a lot of time into your education. I beg of you, because if not, you could be setting yourself up for a complete failure. That was pretty long-winded, but I had to get that off my chest because
I'm glad you did. And you're right. You got to be the CEO and the CFO of your own life, and especially your financial life. And you taught me this, and you're so good about educating people on this. If you're even thinking about going out and trying to buy a home or making that bid, you got to do you got to get pre-approved and pre-qualified, mm-hmm. right? Pre-qualified first, right? Then pre-approved. So you got to even know what you can own, what you could potentially afford right now, and make sure that fits into your budget, because you don't want to be house poor in an uncertain economy.
And key word, afford. Not what you're eligible for, but what you can afford. That's very important. So since we're talking about, you know, real estate, the long-term effects of it, I want to know from, you know, compared to stocks, right? The real ROI of owning a home, if you compare it to stocks, crypto, gold, how does real estate ownership stack up in terms of long-term ROI compared to those other asset classes?
Yeah, well, you know this better than anyone, and I know your audience does too. Owning a home is the most emotional asset we'll ever own, and the biggest one we'll ever own too. So it's hard to put a price tag on that emotion where you're raising your kids and your family's getting together and you're going through life and you're sleeping and you're touching it every day. And you know what I mean? There is something that you can't put a price tag on. But if you look at the absolute returns, and I'm not talking about house flippers that buy low, fix up, sell high, that's different. Those are traders, right? They know what they're doing. I'm talking about the real return to you as a homeowner is around 3 to 5%, call it 4%. Right? Average on an annual basis. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, because it's not a lot when you compare it to the stock market, which is somewhere between 10 and 12%. Over the past 5 years, it's been more like 12 to 15% returns on investment. So if you ask me, you know, you're going to get a better return buying $1 million home or putting $1 million in the stock market. Well, historically, you've gotten a better return in the stock market by a long
time. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. And we've lowered prices. You can save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Shot. And Bitcoin blows all of those asset classes away. But you can't live in a Bitcoin, and neither can you take it down the street and buy a pizza pie with it right now, except in some cities. So, you know, that's a speculative asset and it's not comparable. But if you're talking about what's the best use case of your money, is it taking this big nest egg that I've been able to save and put together over 20 years of saving and compounding to buy my first home? Is that going to give me the biggest return? Or should I just put it in the stock market? History tells you should put it in the stock market, but then you need a place to live. But you have to make this calculation. And I've done this with my wife, and I've done this. We owned a home for a while in New York City, and we sold it, and we did well on that. And we owned it for a very long time. And then we had to make that decision to get a bigger home. Couldn't afford a down payment for the home I want in this city. I want to live here. I need to live here. I work here. It makes more sense for us, a return on our investment, to rent and take the money that we are not spending on all the things that go into beyond the mortgage, but everything else, and invest that money. And having done that and putting that in the stock market over the past, you know, 7 or 8 years has been much smarter than if we had bought something in New York and had with the hopes of someday selling it. Now we've been paying somebody else's rent and that feels terrible, right? But the ROI from an investment perspective alone is better in the market than it is in owning a home, at least here in New York City right now, because of the elevated prices.
That makes sense. You know, rent where you own and invest into other things.
Right.
Right. Rent where you live and invest into other things. And that's what I tell people all the time, especially if you live in New York. It's just not affordable. Right. And the down payments that you have to put here, sometimes it just doesn't make sense.
Right.
So if you have to live in New York, okay, you can look at the outskirts, Connecticut, Philly, you know, smaller areas where you can invest if you still want to own real estate. Boom. Okay, if that doesn't work for you, throw it in the market. That 15%, 10%, like you said, that compounded interest, the returns that you're going to get on that, in 5, 7, 10 years, you can look up and have 10 times what you put in there to begin with. And especially if you tune into shows like Market Mondays and things like that, and you really learn how to trade and doing stuff like that, like you can really probably get a 20, 30% return on your money, right? Yeah. So it's very important you learn how to invest. Now, if someone is in that situation, Caleb, and you know they live in a high cost area, New York, LA, DC, what have you, they don't have enough money to get into the real estate game, but they still love real estate, but they want to get into the stock market.
Yeah.
What real estate stocks are out there that you could, I'm not going to say recommend, but put
here's on the one to follow. Put these on your watch list, so to speak. I'll give you the big home, the big home builders in the United States that are publicly traded. These are the biggest ones. Dr. Horton, they're out of Texas. They have revenue of around $37 billion. Lennar, they're based in Miami. They have like up and down the segment, not just they have high-end homes, but they also have more middle price homes. Pulte Group, they're a big builder. They build first-time move-ups and for people getting into those first and starter homes. Pulte is a big one. I'll give you the tickers in a second. NVR, that has a bunch of different brand names under it. I know you know these. Ryan Homes, NV Homes. Multiple regions, big market cap, $22 billion company, and Toll Brothers, which is really the high end there. Toll Brothers, ticker TOL, more luxury homes. And I like to look at how these stocks have done and how sensitive they are to the interest rate environment, because while the 30-year fix, as I said, is not all that sensitive to the federal funds rate when the Fed lowers rates or raises rates. It is, believe me, especially there's a trend where we know it's going to go down over time a lot. It's sensitive to that, but it's much more sensitive to the yield on the 10-year. But these stocks are much more sensitive to what the Fed does. In the past year alone, only one of these stocks has done very well and beat the market, and that is Toll Brothers. That's the luxury side of the market. TOL is the ticker there. That stock is up some 25% in 1 year. The stock market itself, the S&P 500, is about 20% right now. So Toll is super sensitive. But you see this not just in the home building market, Matt. You see this throughout the retail industry. Luxury high-end is doing great. Why? Because of what I told you earlier. Household net worth at an all-time high. The rich are doing fine. Thank you very much. So you see the luxury end of the high market doing well. Toll Brothers is up 25%. And then there's a huge drop-off there. I'm looking at the Homes ETF, HOMZ. If you're looking to just track the real estate market from a stock perspective, this exchange-traded fund, HOMZ, has all of these stocks in it, right? So all of these stocks in it over the past year, this ETF, it's like an index fund for the housing market. That's only up 12%. That's basically not even, you know, just a little bit better than half of what the stock market did. And then the drop off is massive. So Lennar, I was telling you, they build homes on the lower end. That stock's getting absolutely crushed. That's down like 18%. And the rest of them are down like 9% on DR Horton. So they have been a rough place to invest. Now I took it back, because I like to see these things, not just over 1 year. It's been a weird year, right? I took it back 5 years. In the past 5 years, Toll Brothers, that same stock I told you about, is up 160%. That's a heck of a return for a home builder stock in a housing market that's been a little bit kind of messed up since the pandemic, but it's the high end there. Again, 130% rise for Pulte Group. Not bad over 5 years, but not keeping pace with the just barely keeping pace with the stock market itself. On the super low end of that is the Lennar, only up 77%. That's not like a less than a 15% return. Not terrible, but you're not looking at like a Nvidia. You're not, we're not talking about a Meta here, a MicroStrategy. The stocks that have been dominating the stock market are so way outpacing the housing market. It's a pretty good proxy, though, for how people feel about the market and where it's going to go from here. And all these stocks are trading lower, trending lower over the past couple of months, as it has made it, the Federal Reserve has made it pretty clear that there are no hurry to lower interest rates. One more thing, They may not have a choice eventually, because we know the president would like to get much more involved in the direction of interest rates, and he likes them to go down. So I think that these stocks are not going to trend well for a while until we have a better idea for where interest rates are going to be. And the Fed's basically saying we're not in any hurry.
Lots of gems in that, man. Lots of gems. Throw some gems in the comment for Caleb, man. Throw some gems in the comment. So what are some of the key metrics that investors should look at when evaluating real estate stocks or REITs?
Yeah. Well, REITs are real estate investment trusts. This is a way to invest in the real estate market like building owners or mall owners without actually investing in buildings, without buying buildings. You can buy into the real estate investment trust, a little bit of a tax advantage there, but they're not doing that great either because they're ultra sensitive to interest rates. Schwab has a big one. SCHI is the ticker, the Schwab US REIT ETF. And over the past year, up about 8.5%. Again, the market's up 21%. So that tells you what you need to know about that. And if you were to put the money in anywhere else, the QQQs, for example, in the NASDAQ, 100 fastest growing stocks in the NASDAQ, that's up 22, 23%. Stock market itself up 21%. So REITs have not been a great place to invest either. But if you look at what's been the hottest part of the real estate market in the past 2 to 3 years, beyond the luxury end, it's warehouses. Why warehouses, Matt?
Why warehouses? That was going to be my question.
Why warehouses? Well, just think about how we get goods and services these days, right? We order from Amazon, it's in our house in like 4 hours. Now, I live in New York City. If I order a toothbrush, not that I would, it'll be here in the morning because it's coming from a warehouse just over the river in New Jersey right now. When you're driving across this beautiful country of ours, or you're flying across it and you look down and all you see is huge warehouses everywhere near the airports, just along the countryside, everywhere you look now, it's because we need them for just-in-time delivery for the Amazons of the world, but also to store data centers that are processing our data, our information, AI data centers for the Microsofts, Amazons, Apples, Alphabets of the world, Metas that want to control AI. They are massive farms of servers that are being powered by chips made by companies like NVIDIA, and that is the real estate play. And the biggest private equity and banks in this country are the biggest owners of those warehouses. Look at the Blackstone Group. They've been buying warehouses across this country and across Europe for the past 10 years because they knew that this was coming. Our data needs a place to be processed before it goes up in the cloud, so to speak. It's not in the cloud, it's on the ground. And you need a lot of energy to power those warehouses and you need a lot of computing power. That's what this whole thing has been about. This whole rise in the stock and NVIDIA and this big mega tech build out, super scalers, we call them. They are building as big a data centers as they can because they want to control all that data through their AI products and their programs. And that's the future. That's the end game here. So it's been warehouses for just-in-time delivery and for storing our data. And that is a trend I do not see coming to an end anytime soon. And you can invest in that.
Yeah, I mean, damn, that was a lot. You know what, Caleb? You make a whole lot of sense, man. The warehouse game has definitely been picking up over the past 10 years. As you're speaking, I'm just sitting here thinking about some of the bigger investors that I know. That's what they've been buying. Right. Warehouses, storage facilities. You know, these are the things that folks have been investing in. So let's keep on that topic. Right. From an investing standpoint, real estate investing standpoint, what besides warehouses, what other areas of opportunity or what type of asset class properties should investors going into 2025 and beyond during this new presidency? What should we be looking at? Besides single family homes, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything in your opinion that we should be paying attention to that the big boys are looking at?
Yeah. And look, a lot of it comes down to proximity to power right now. That's just the way it is, right? The closer you sat at the inauguration, the better off your company is done. And we've seen that, you know, right up close, right in our face. There's that, right? We know that this administration is putting a lot of money and getting a lot of other countries and companies from outside the US to put money into the build out of our AI infrastructure, right? So we know that that's going to be a big deal. And we know that we need to control the production of our own semiconductors, our own chips to power the AI revolution. That will still be in favor. Now, we've seen incredible growth from AI stocks over the past few years, whether it's an NVIDIA or even like the quantum AI stocks. They've been up a ridiculous amount, 1,500%, 1,800%. They have way been traded, you know, much higher than they deserve to be. And we've had a little bit of a reckoning there. But the AI build-out continues. It's just not the chips. It's the power for these data centers. Why do we want to drill, baby, drill? Or why does the president keep saying drill, baby, drill? We need a lot more power in this country, A, so we don't import it, and we're next exporters anyway, but still, so we don't import it, but we need it to power all of this computing, right? And all of this infrastructure that they intend to build. So power, proximity to power, but actual power, power generation, natural gas, coal is coming back in a big way. You've seen the conversations around the drillers and where they're going to be able to drill. Power and energy is much, very much in favor for this administration. And I think that they're going to make sure that, you know, those companies get the benefit that they need. And anything made in America, right? If you onshore here, you're going to get that tax break one way or the other. You're going to get favored, and that should be good for your stock price. I think that's going to be hot. And I think, you know, tech, you just can't turn your back on tech because it's the relentless bid, right? The biggest stocks in the world are the most widely held stocks in the world. No surprise there. But what are they? What are they? They're NVIDIA, they're Apple, they're Amazon, they're Meta, right? They're Tesla, they're Microsoft, right? And the bigs are going to stay big and get bigger because it's this thing we call in investing, the relentless bid. All of us that contribute to our IRAs or our 401ks every 2 weeks, we're buying large cap index funds, right? We're not, can't make too many choices in a 401k. If you want to own the market, you got to own the big companies. The big companies have benefited. Every 2 weeks, we keep buying them, right? So even when we've had these dips, even in an NVIDIA or a Meta, these stocks have come raging back. So you can't not bet on big tech. That's where the growth is. But all these other sectors, I think, are going to do very well. Power, right? The privatization of power. Private equity is coming to the capital markets. This is a brand new frontier, but you're also going to see some of the old industries that were out of favor during the Biden administration come back pretty strong.
Lots of gems, man. Caleb, man, you just like dropping gem after gem after gem, man. Y'all got to make sure y'all like this video, share this with 10 people. I mean, throw some gems in the comments, some fire in the comment, because this is a masterclass on display right now. A masterclass. You are Caleb at the jewelry store. He brought the jewels with him. I love it.
Drink it.
So, all right. Let me ask you this, right? All right. So, how much time we've been on this so far? We've been on here for about 45 minutes now. All right. I gotta ask you this, since we were talking about asset classes, what to invest in. Let me ask you about the hottest real estate markets that's happening right now, both for buyers, for home buyers, and for investors. What are the hottest real estate markets in your opinion right now?
Yeah, it's not even my opinion. I'm part of the Dot Investopedia is part of the Dot Dash Meredith family of websites. So we have Southern Living in there. We have BHG, Better Homes and Gardens. We have our finger on the pulse of a lot of markets, Midwest Living as well. The Southern and the Western cities remain hot. That's an affordability thing. It's also a lifestyle thing. A lot of people have moved down there. Now, Florida has become more challenging, but it's still the number one place where people move every single year, no matter what, right? People are going to Florida, but other cities and states down there have done very well. I mentioned Arkansas, not randomly. One of the hottest cities in the country over the last couple of years has been Little Rock. But you've also seen, you know, cities in North Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, also do very well. Some of the northern Gulf cities in Florida have been very hot real estate markets. And Texas has been a very hot real estate market. We know that during the pandemic, there was a lot of Phoenix, there was a lot of San Diego, there was a lot of Denver. It's come to Texas, and a lot of that is no income tax for Texas. So that's been a pretty big deal. And Los Angeles, sadly, is becoming an aggressive real estate market because of the tragedies. There's going to be a lot of rebuilding in the city of Los Angeles and a lot of reimagining of it. In terms for sellers, Buffalo, New York has been pretty strong, believe it or not, up in the Finger Lakes region around Indianapolis, Indiana has been pretty strong. Even Providence, you see college towns still, big college town cities have done very well over the past, not just few years, but over the past couple of decades. And even the bigger ones continue to do very well and get bigger. So that's where the selling has been good, but the buying has always been good lately in the South, and I think that's going to continue, but it's going to spread kind of Southwest.
Yeah, the South has been on fire for a very long time, and a lot of people are migrating from high cost states, you know, to the South and just exploding the prices there. So yeah, the South, man, if you're in the Carolinas, you know, Georgia, you know, all of these areas, Alabama, all of these areas, man, they are on fire. And a lot of people are making a lot of money out there. So
Tennessee as well, like in the Nashville area, has been very hot.
Nashville is just, oh my God, Nashville, beautiful city too.
Such a good city.
It's on fire. All right, Caleb, I'm not going to hold you here all night because I can have this conversation probably for the next 3 hours with you.
I'm not going anywhere.
We got about another, I'll keep it for another 5 minutes because they love you in the comments right now. I want to know about, you know, what do you think home buyers should do? Should they sit on the sidelines and kind of wait to see what that 10-year treasury is going to do? Is it going to bring down mortgage rates back to that 6.5, low sixes? Should they kind of wait to see if some of these things that Trump is speaking about over the first couple of weeks, are they actually going to come to fruition and actually, you know, change and impact the market? Or should they just go out here and buy today if they have the credit capital, the capacity, the reserves, you know, things like that, and just hold the real estate? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, this I learned from you. You know, this is an emotional purchase, but it's also an opportunistic purchase. Like if you're dead set on buying a home and you have one in your sights and you have all of those things lined up, and it's not just what you can afford, but you should not spend on a house everything that you can afford. You should make sure you have a cushion because you know there's other expenses. But if you're ready to do it, don't wait for news headlines. Don't wait for a drop in the 10-year treasury. It is an opportunistic moment. If it's the house you want and in the range you can get it in and it fits into your affordability scheme, buy it, right? We're going to be waiting around for a long time before we see mortgage rates at 4.5%, 3.5%. And as I said, there's about, 30, 40% of homeowners that have no mortgage at all, right? So they're in no hurry to sell. And then the other 50% have mortgages under 5%. So don't wait for that arbitrage to happen. If you see it and you can afford it, you can always refinance later. But you also taught me this, Matt. You don't just refinance the first opportunity. It'll cost you more money in refinancing unless the rate is really dropped. But if you got the things together right now and that monthly payment after you put down the down payment still allows you, to some financial flexibility so that you can save, invest, pay down debt if you have it, pay for, if somebody in the family gets sick, God forbid, or have that little extra cushion, do it, right? Like you can't wait around for the perfect pitch anymore, because the perfect pitch is not going to come. You're not going to get a $350,000 3-bedroom house in a sweet neighborhood at a 4% mortgage. That's the 90s, right? In the early 2000s, the pandemic. If that happens, something else is very wrong with the economy, and I would be worried about that. So again, if you can do it, because it's not going to get that much better anytime soon. If you're like, how much longer do I have to wait? Well, you're going to be waiting a long time for the perfect conditions, and I don't know if we'll see them. I just don't see it. You know, I just given deficits and just given the way monetary policy works and just given the fact that all things of value keep rising in price, it's just not going to happen. So set your sights on something you can afford, make the move, be aggressive, be ready, show that you're a very serious buyer by being pre-qualified, right? By having your paperwork in order and being ready to close very quickly and get your home, because, you know, you're not going to regret that if you need a place to live and a place to raise your family.
No, that's a fact. What about, let's speak to those folks, as you mentioned, you know, there's about 50% of the market under 5% interest rate. And there's, I forget the stat you said about people who have, you know, no mortgage or, you know, less than 50% or more than 50% equity in their home. What about those folks, right? Who might, they don't have a need to sell. They have a gang of equity in their house, a bunch of equity in their house. And it's just sitting there. It's just dead money, right?
Yep.
Should those folks take out home equity line of credits, HELOCs, and now take that money out and reinvest that money into either real estate, business, or the stock market?
That is, a personal decision, but I know a lot of people have this. It's actually 73% of homeowners have interest rates below 5%. Matt, that's a lot of people.
That's right? A lot of people.
So if you do take a HELOC out, you're going to take it out now at a very high interest rate. So you're going to be paying a lot of money to borrow that money. So the return you get on that money, if you're going to take it, better exceed the rate, the interest rates you're going to be paying it. And you have to know that that's going to happen. You have to, I think that has to be a guarantee. You don't want to take it out and lose money on the value because you're paying more in interest than you could get back. So, you know, I can't tell you that if you took out $30,000 right now from your home at a 7% rate and you put it in the stock market, that you're definitely going to get better than a 7% return. It's uncertain, right? Now we got 25% last year and we got 21% the year before that. But the year before that, the stock market fell 22%. So, but the average long-term is higher. If you have a good use case for that money right now, and I don't mean like trading it in crypto and taking a wild swing at a couple of meme stocks, or that's not a good use case. The good use case would be, can I make this money more valuable by putting it somewhere else than just sitting in locked up in the equity in my home? So that really becomes a, where's the best return on your investment? And that is a calculation you have to make.
That is definitely a calculation you have to make. I tell people all the time, don't blow the church's money, right? The church is your primary residence. Right. Don't mess it up, because if you ain't got a plan of action, you know, there's oftentimes, you know, because a lot of people, they've never seen, if you got $200,000-$300,000 of equity, you pull out half of that equity. I mean, that's a lot of money. It could be a shock when you have that type of money at your fingertips, and you can do whatever you want with it. So I tell people all the time, Caleb, if you're going to take out a HELOC, make sure you got a plan of action. Make sure you got the capacity for it. You know exactly what you're going to do, and understand everything's a risk. Because nothing is guaranteed. You buy a rental property, these tenants ain't guaranteed to pay you. You put it in the stock market, the market can crash, right? It's volatile. We're in a very volatile time with a volatile president. So you just have to make sure you got all your ducks in a row.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people take it out, as you know, and they do it for home improvement. Like they've been wanting to, you know, make a nicer kitchen, add a room, you know, whatever. And that's not a bad use case. It does increase the value of your home. So that's not a bad use case for it. Just know you're just going to have to pay that back over time. And there is interest. So make sure that, you know, the value is commensurate with how much you're going to be paying on that money, even though it's kind of your money.
I agree. So Caleb, man, we're coming up on an hour here, man. I'm not going to hold you up all night. Leave us with a final gem, man. You're the jeweler tonight. Caleb the jeweler. Right. So leave us with a final gem for the audience, man. Let us know what's on your mind.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot on my mind, and I've been very busy following the news. But I've also learned this. I've been a business journalist for 30 years, and I've been through a bunch of cycles and a bunch of presidents and a bunch of administrations. And, you know, this has been, you know, it's only been 3 weeks, so it feels like it's January 45th. There's just been a lot of news and a lot of headlines and a lot of head fakes and a lot of things that'll make you very nervous as an investor, as a person trying to run your family's finances. It's very easy to get distracted by all this and lose sort of the, you know, your goal, right? Don't take your eye off the goal here, and you don't have to react to every single headline. When it comes to investing, I'm staying invested. I may have moved my strategy around a little bit with my financial advisor, but I'm staying in the market. I believe in the long-term benefits of compounding and the long-term effects of just staying in there. That said, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to want to scare you off the path. Don't go off your own path. Right now, this is the time to stick to your plan. Make sure you have a plan. As I said earlier, you are the CEO and the CFO of your financial life and of your personal life, and treat it like that, right? Treat it like the business that it is, and with the treatment that it deserves, as if you were running a business and you have people depending on you, and you'll be just fine. But uncertain times cause chaos and uncomfortability. You guys got to, you know, keep your head down, work hard, and stick to your plan.
I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, give a round of applause. Throw some gems in the comment, fire in the comment for my brother, Mr. Caleb Silva, editor-in-chief of Investopedia. And make sure you guys go to investopedia.com every single day. Read. There's a lot of great information. A lot of things about investing, not just in real estate, but just in all asset classes. So make sure you guys go to investopedia.com, check them out, tap in every single day. Caleb, thank you for joining us tonight. We really appreciate you, my brother.
Thank you, Matt. It's been an honor. And I really appreciate you and all the things you do to educate people. And I'm be happy to join anytime. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We're going to take you up on that. Thank you, Caleb. I appreciate you tonight.
Thank you, man.
Everybody, make sure y'all go follow my guy Caleb on Instagram as well. I'm going to put all everything in the show notes, the link to Investopedia, Caleb's personal Instagram. Make sure you tap in with him. And you know what? Today was such a great show. I'm going to give you guys a gift. I gave you guys a gift last week. I'm going to give you another gift this week. You know, we got the 90-day real estate investing boot camp. Session 4 is tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here you go, y'all. Link is, I put the Zoom link in the comments right now. Last week was phenomenal. You missed it if you didn't join it. But I'm going to give you the Zoom link to register. I'm not even going to charge you. You ain't going to get access to the replays, but you'll have access to the Zoom link. I'm going to put it in the show notes as well. For those of you who watch this on Thursday, you're too late, okay? So if you watch this tonight, now, or tomorrow, Wednesday, before 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you'll be able to join the 90-day real estate investing boot camp. I put the link in the comments, and make sure you guys download. Do me a favor. If you get value from this channel, go to wherever you listen to podcasts, download Rants and Gems on audio. If you're on Apple, rate us 5 stars, leave a review. This helps the algorithms, man. So if you're getting a lot of great quality information from my channel, please download us on all podcast audio outlets. And I'm going to put the Zoom link again in the comments. I want to see you guys there tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tomorrow, we're going to be discussing creative financing with, I can't even think of the name, what we're going to be doing. Subject 2. I almost forgot. I had a brain freeze. We're doing subject 2 financing. So you guys ask me all the time about subject 2 deals and things like that. So make sure you guys tap in tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to the 90-Day Real Estate and Boot Camp Session 4. All right. Thank you, guys. This was excellent information. I hope you got a lot of value. Share this with 10, 15, 20, 100 people. Let's make Rants and Gems the number one real estate podcast show in the world. All right. I appreciate y'all. Y'all have a good night. And make sure you check the live tab here on YouTube for all replays. All right? Y'all have a good one. God bless. Oh, hold on. Before I forget, go to mgbookstore.com. House Economics, The Real Estate Investor Manifesto. Both under 100 pages. Easy, quick read. For you, if you're trying to learn and you don't have a lot of money to spend, go ahead and get the book bundles. It's things like only $40 or $45. So go pick them up, right? Go pick it up. Go to mgbookstore.com. All right. So that's all I got for you guys tonight. I hope you guys got value from today's episode and all the episodes. And again, 90-Day Real Estate Investing Boot Camp tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Zoom link is in the chat. Peace.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.